This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
On May 8, 1945, the Nazi leaders surrendered, and in Europe, World War II came to an end. In the immediate aftermath, millions upon millions of uprooted peoples began to fill the roads, seeking refuge from the devastation they had barely survived and that still surrounded them. Among these were Jewish survivors of the Nazi extermination campaigns. These wandering refugees were popularly known as DPs, short for displaced persons, and many were gathered into DP camps under the administration of the American, British, and French occupying armies in conquered Germany. But until the work of Dr. Josef Grudzinski, there had been very little historical research into the specific experiences of the displaced Jews. Josef Grudzinski was surprised by what he found in the archives because of what it revealed about the relation between the displaced European Jews who had survived Nazism and the Zionist movement officials sent from pre-Israeli Palestine to work in the DP camps. His English language book on this subject is titled In the Shadow of the Holocaust. Josef Grudzinski is a professor of psychology at Tel Aviv University, and he is the Canada Research Chair in Neurolinguistics at McGill University. And we've reached him at his home in Montreal. Welcome, Josef, to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Hello.
Growing up in Israel after World War II, what picture was conveyed to you of the experiences of Jews in the DP camps and their relations with the Zionist movement in Palestine?
Before starting, I just have to make a small correction. In all modesty, I'm definitely not the first person to have carried out research on the DPs. I have done it from a particular angle, but it's not as if there hasn't been any research done on this kind of problem. There has been, but perhaps it has been more from like the mainstream perspective rather than a somewhat critical perspective such as mine. And now we can go back to your question, which is the DPs and the way I have been taught about them when I was growing up in Israel. You see, I heard the word DP in Israel, you know, when I was growing up in history classes, but it was kind of trivial because the way they taught it, I was taught, and I believe it still is that the displaced person camps in Germany, Austria, and Italy were a trivial nuance in the history of the Jews. What happened was, so I was taught, that Holocaust survivors all were gathered in those places. They all had deep desire to go to Palestine and then Israel, and they actually all went there. So this is a little bit of a footnote in the history of the Jewish people that took them straight out from, you know, the killing fields of Europe straight into Palestine, and that was it. That's the way I was taught.
And when you looked at the historical archives, what did you discover that challenged this narrative?
Well, first of all, you know, you don't even need to go into any archive. You just have to read the Canadian newspapers and realize that one of the most distinguished Supreme Court justices here is Rosalie Abela, who herself was born in a displaced person camp. Well, she's Jewish. She was born in a displaced person camp. So did her parents. Why isn't she in Israel? You might ask yourself. So it turns out that quite a large number of displaced persons did not end up in Palestine or Israel. And in fact, the numbers, as they were tallied up, I was the first to do this demographic survey. It turns out that the majority of Jewish displaced persons did not go to Palestine or Israel. In fact, they went to the United States, Canada, Australia, and whatever other countries in the West. Some even stayed in Germany, about 20,000 of them. So the minority of displaced Jews ended up in Palestine and Israel, which, of course, runs against the mainstream version.
Was that simply because it was easier to come to countries like Canada and the United States than to go to Palestine?
In fact, the funniest thing is that at any given point during the story of those displaced person camps, which is 1945 to 1951, at any given point it was difficult to go anywhere, but Palestine and then Israel were the easiest places to go to, or should I say the least difficult places to immigrate. And still, despite the fact that it was more difficult to go to Canada or to the United States, the majority did not want to go to Palestine and Israel. In fact, in Canada, it was quite clear. There's a very famous historical book here by Irving Abella, the husband of Rosalie Abella, called One Was Too Many, arguing, you know, telling the story of the restrictive immigration policies of the Canadian government with respect to Holocaust survivors. And still, the majority of displaced Jews did not go to Palestine and Israel.
Now, you have in your book an account of some of the children in the displaced persons camps and the conflict between their interest and that of the Zionist activists, Zionist movement activists who came from Palestine to work in with the Jewish survivors in the camps.
Right. There are two issues that have to be taken into account, and that's what my book is trying to grapple with. One is, what did the Jews who went through those horrible experiences, what did they want? And now, just by looking at the immigration pattern, we know exactly what they wanted. And two, what did the Zionists want them to do? And by the way, the story is told in Israel, you can tell that the Zionists wanted them to be Zionists. That's quite obvious. It turns out that not all of them wanted to, and this led to a conflict. And the conflict had two facets to it. One is, what would the Zionists do with Jews who wanted to go elsewhere, in this case the children? And secondly, what would the Zionists do when they would want to bring somebody to Palestine and that person would be reluctant? In the case of children, I find it most shocking. And remember, these are Jews. This is not the enemy. It's not the other. It's the very same people that the Zionist movement is designed to protect. There were about 4,000 or 5,000Jewish children surviving on German soil in the summer of 1945, after the war ended. Children had much less of a survivability skills. They had no skills. They were weaker and so on. And they were still there in those terrible places which were rampant with disease, malnutrition, and so on. There was a plan by the Rabbinical Association of New York and by the Jewish community in Britain to remove all these children from German soil and bring them to England and France. And in fact, deals were struck with both the English and the French governments in this respect. The moment the Zionists heard about it, they basically thwarted those deals, and the children were left to stay in Germany. The Zionists' motivation to do so was dual. First of all, they wanted to make sure that all those candidates for Palestine immigration would be in Germany waiting for them to populate Palestine, because that was the main goal of the Zionist movement at the time. As Ben-Gurion explicitly said, we need to populate Palestine with multitudes of Jews. That's our goal, he said. Secondly, any Jew going to the West weakens the claim that the Zionists had against the British mandate that at the time was enforced in Palestine that restricted Jewish immigration. So they realized much before many others that the Jewish suffering in Europe is a very good bargaining chip for their political goal in Palestine. The suffering of these children is documented, publicized, and so on, could serve as a very good point to pressure the British to open the gates of Palestine for Jewish immigration. And that was their motivation, to try and keep the children in Europe, which they successfully did.
You mentioned a second aspect, and that was with regards to how the Zionist movement approached and reacted to the adults, let's say, in the camps, who they wanted to come to Israel, particularly to Palestine initially, particularly to be a fighting force within the Jewish army of the Haganah.
Right. So the first story in this respect, the first affair that I detail, is indeed the children's affair in 1945, and the second one is an affair of forced conscription in the displaced person camp by the Haganah, by the Jewish forming army, who sent envoys to Germany to gather soldiers, you know, to help it fight the war against the Arabs in 1948 during the war, what's called the War of Independence of Israel. There was serious manpower shortage at the time in Palestine for the forming army, as you can imagine. Altogether, there were about 100,000 candidates for draft, and in fact, the army was 100,000 strong at the time. And a plan was drafted to draft in the displaced person camp, people of the ages of 18 to 35 or so. In the beginning, they tried to get volunteers, but the people didn't were not that happy to volunteer. They didn't want to go there. They said, "We smelled blood. We smelled fire already. Let others smell it now." And only about 700 volunteers was gathered. You have to realize that the population of the Jewish displaced person camp in 1948 is about 250,000 Jews, and only 700 volunteers for the war ended up being interested. That's a very small percentage. It's less of a third of a percent. It's also another indication of the affinity of the Jews in these places to Palestine. So what the Zionists did, and they could do that, they had the right administrative structure for it, they actually drafted by force in the displaced person camps, and they ended up getting 7,800 draftees who went to Palestine and joined the Israeli army, thereby increasing its force by about 7 or 8%. That's quite significant. In fact, all these documentation, you have to realize, I found in Israeli and Jewish archives. It's by their own testimony. You know, the numbers come from them. Everything comes from, you know, the Israeli archives, the Israeli Defense Force archives, the Jewish Displaced Person archives. It's not as if you have to look at the enemy's archives, as some people would immediately object. You look at the very testimony of those who participated in it, and they proudly report that they drafted by force.
You wrote your book first in Hebrew and published it in Israel for an Israeli audience, and now you've written a slightly adjusted version of it in English. I want to know how the book was received in Israel, and now how it the English language version is being received, let's say, in the United States and Canada.
Well, as you can imagine, first of all, you know, I rewrote about a third of it, but it doesn't really matter because I had to adjust it to, you know, a North American readership. But the way it was received in Israel, it actually got quite a few big headlines, and immediately it was denounced by the standard organs, okay? In the funny way, you know, I'm not a professional historian, I'm a linguist, I'm a neurolinguist, and the main argument against me was that I'm not a historian and I'm not a Zionist. These things are true, but the question is, are they relevant? And I have, you know, there were quite a few reviews of my book. In fact, the most prominent one among them was by Avram Burg, who was at the time the Speaker of the Israeli Parliament and had previously been the chairman of the Jewish Agency for Palestine, which was the most important organ in doing all these things that he described. He wrote quite clearly, you know, he wrote, if even one quarter of what Grodzinski says is correct and we have to look at ourselves in the mirror, it's very, very sad. He at least was honest about it. The historical establishment in Israel, by and large, ignored my book, didn't try to challenge it, even though I have to tell you that I, you know, not very modestly, my standards of documentation are a little higher than usual, I think. You know, I come from an empirical science and I know what evidence is. So these things are very seriously documented, and I'm still waiting for somebody to take the challenge. In North America, thus far, you know, it hasn't gotten a lot of press. I'm not exactly sure why. You know, I think that in some mainstream radio stations, for the publicist of this book, it was quite difficult to get an interview. People immediately said, oh, this is critical of Israel, thank you very much. But, you know, the one review that it received was very positive. It was in The Nation in January by Baruch Kimmerling from the Hebrew University, and that's the one, that's all I can say. Well, you can imagine that when you bring bad news from the past, people are not going to like it.
Well, thank you very much for the news you've brought and the historical research you've done on this. Best of luck, Yosef.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Dr. Yosef Grodzinski, who holds the Canadian Research Chair in Neurolinguistics at McGill University and also is a professor of psychology at Tel Aviv University. His book is titled In the Shadow of the Holocaust, The Struggle Between Jews and Zionists in the Aftermath of World War II. It's published by Common Courage Press in the United States.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.